Anu, your LinkedIn game is so strong. You are one of the best, like strongest, as far as authors that are like bootstrapping their own launch, author marketing, everything. You're probably one of the best I've ever seen. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Like, where have you been getting information from, and how's that been going?
Oh my God, thank you, Timmy, for asking that. Well, maybe I will start with the fact that I have been on LinkedIn, I think, for the last 2 years more actively. So LinkedIn is not totally new to me as a platform and posting things online. I think that is really quite critical when we start off by, as you said, bootstrapping the book. So comfort, I already had a bit of comfort with the platform in terms of posting, so that was useful. In terms of getting ideas, well, Timmy, I got them from you, your book playbook, which was absolutely amazing. I loved everything you put in there in terms of even what are the lessons we've learned. And I think that was really powerful. That's not only about the book, but the process of writing the book and giving credit to other people who have walked this journey with me. And I think even that question that you asked, who is this person who you like to acknowledge in your book writing? I think it was so powerful because it made me actually take a bit of a pause. I'm like, yeah, who are these people without whom, I wouldn't have come up to here. And just a thank you. Thank you for being there for me in this moment where, and I'm sure you know this, Timmy, book writing can be very lonely. It can be really hard. Just these angels who are walking among us. So
What's
your
crazy,
playbook.
what's crazy that I found when it comes to writing is when you're at least this, I mean, and I don't know how much of this necessarily translates to writing the type of book that you wrote, but at least when it comes to kids' book writing, I will be in basically a hole, writing, writing and writing and writing, and I do not realize what I have made. Until and then, so this is hopefully in your future, until you're out touring with your book and you get to like get reactions from a
Yes.
live group of people that are readers. Because it's crazy, I'll feel like I'm writing garbage basically until I start touring with it. And hopefully you don't feel that way. But I can relate
I
to the
do.
feeling. Yeah, I can
Yeah.
relate to the feeling of feeling like you're just in a hole by yourself, writing a book. So you're currently you've hit number one new release in I think at least two of the categories that your book is published under, and your bestseller in all of the categories that your book is published under, which is awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What has been like what has the re responses and reactions been so far from like what have been some of your most successful, you would say, posts that you've done about your book, or as far as like your outreach strategy, like texting strategy and whatnot, what has gone well for you? Is there anything that surprised you, like, oh, I can't believe this worked so well, or anything like that?
Oh, again, absolutely, Timmy. It one of the strategies is again from your playbook. So credit to you.
Credit to me. No, just kidding.
Credit to you,
Most of the, most
Timmy.
of this I stole from other people.
I wouldn't have thought of it. I got to admit, Timmy, when I started writing the book, I didn't think publicity would be such a big thing. Until clearly I had this conversation with you earlier, and you were kind of telling me about it. And as well as my editor as well. So the thing that really surprised me was one of the very first posts I put, which is I think just to say that it's coming out, my book is coming out, and I
Wow.
think that was the first thing I said. It was a bit of like, boom, my book is going to be out in 10 days' time, and the number of people that commented or just liked that post on LinkedIn specifically was
That
really
tells
phenomenal.
me that you have built up a lot of goodwill on LinkedIn. Because when I looked at that, I was like, oh, everybody is commenting on this. And honestly, that's hit or miss whether or not lots of people are going to comment.
I agree with you, Timmy, which goes back to my earlier point that I was saying that comfort level on that platform, I think, has to start even before you've actually said any announcement, right? Because, yeah, people need to have known you already for a couple of maybe months or years with your posting. So I've been doing that. But I got to admit, even having done that, as you said, it could have been a cricket thing that nobody said anything. So Really very, very grateful for the support that people have actually liked it, commented, and congratulated. So that was a big surprise. I gotta admit, I didn't think of that. What else has been helpful?
Or
I think
surprising.
it's, yeah, surprising. I think almost every post after that, what I think surprised me were that people who were commenting were not my regular network, if that makes sense. So they're
That's
not
great.
people I would have naturally connected with yet, or commented, or said anything on LinkedIn. And as you know, majority of the people on LinkedIn are silent. Or that's what people tell me. The majority are silent. They're
Yeah.
just browsing. They're not really commenting. So the what surprised me was the number of new people that I haven't connected with, and they were commenting or liking it.
Yeah.
So yes, that was surprising for me.
So my next question for you, Anu, is why did you write this book? Why did you write Rest, Reset, and Reframe?
Oh my God, what a wonderful question to me. I actually now realize that I have two answers to that question, Timmy.
Okay.
When I first started out, and this journey, the writing journey has been 18 months, but the whole thinking process has been much longer than that because of the interviews, the coaching that I did, all the stories collection, everything has been, I think, almost 3 years. So when I first thought of writing this book, it actually came down to the idea that I wanted to be a thought leader in my industry. As an executive coach, as a facilitator, there's so many coaches and facilitators in Singapore. And so my mentor said that one of the ways to establish yourself, your credibility, is to put yourself as a thought leader, which is back to, kind of publish a book. And so it was just a comment, and I just kind of it let it fester for a while, and I'm like, yeah, write a book. How difficult can it be? And how wrong was I on that? So that was my first reason, I gotta say. That's the reason I started off, the thought leader establishment myself. But honestly, to me, that reason has shifted so much over the last 18 months since I've been writing it. And today, and just to share with you a little bit, to me, today is my birthday. It's my 50th birthday, literally today, 11th of April,
Amazing.
as I'm talking to you, which is, I'm really so thankful for this moment. And as I've been reflecting on my book journey, my reason now for keeping on to writing it, editing it, going through the pain is actually to leave something for my kids and to leave with this idea that if you put your mind to something, if you are really dedicated, you can achieve almost anything you put your mind to. There's going to be lots of impediments along the way, but if you are focused, dedicated, and you know what you truly want, you can make it happen. And that's actually become my second reason for writing the book.
So before we hit record, I asked you when you were writing it, what's an epiphany that you had about your story that you don't feel got fully fleshed out or that you just hope that people don't miss? And the epiphany that you had was that you actually had a story to tell and that you've always been very introverted and shy growing up and you didn't think you had anything to share. What changed? What was the epiphany? How did you realize that you did have a story to share? What is that story?
It's interesting that you're asking me that question again, Timmy, because it's really bringing back some fond memories of those moments, right? And for me, the moment actually happened in one of my workshops. So I'm a corporate facilitator, so I do a lot of workshops. And as a corporate facilitator, very often we are using a model, someone else's model, and we are kind of sharing it, teaching it, and all of that. And I think the moment that it happened for me was, this was, I think, almost 3 or 4 years ago when I shared a story about me, something that happened to me. And it was to do with COVID, and an experience that I had in COVID where my revenue is my, I'm a solopreneur, so my revenue, I mean, it was literally zero. There was nothing, it
So
was zero.
2019 was $0 in revenue.
Yeah, 2020, right? So I
2020, okay.
looked at my income statement. I'm like, what is zero? When did we hit zero? And so
I can
on
relate
that,
to that. Yeah. So
yes.
2020, I lost it. I lost all the I was my full-time job was to tour as a kids book author. All that just went pfft, gone.
Yes, and you can imagine as a person who's doing facilitation, right? It's face to face. We didn't really do much in Zoom at that point. And so everything was all my emails was we've canceled, we've canceled, we've canceled, we've postponed, and it was just zero, right? So that was it was. And so my journey out of that, because I do feel I went into quite a bit of a dip. Now that dip was so bad that honestly, all that kept me going was chocolates, which is not the best thing to go for. And there was a point in time when I realized, oh my God, I don't fit in my office clothes anymore. I gotta do something about this. So
Hey,
there
it
was
was
that.
better than for me, it was alcohol, so.
Chocolates and alcohol, yeah, they can be a companion, but I don't think you want them all the time. So there
No.
was that huge dip, right? And as a coach, people always say, oh, you're a coach, you should know what to do, you should know what questions to ask.
Yeah.
But no, there are moments where even we are just in our doldrums, right? And I remember that moment where my husband just walked past me and he's like, is there something you can do for yourself? Obviously, he walked away after that. He didn't wait to listen to my story. But
Okay.
that question really resonated. Is there something I can do for myself? And I said to myself, yes, I can. Whatever happened globally, pandemic, yes, that's happening. But even in that chaos, I can take control. I can do something. And I did. And I trained myself. I got myself certified. I took up speaking courses online. I took up a Stanford Wellness course online. So I was investing in myself as I was waiting for things to start opening up. So it was a bit of that dip. And then what can you do? One
How
thing that
did
you
you
can do.
survive financially through that?
Well, obviously 50% of my income was totally down. Cut back on a lot of things to me. It was just a lot of obviously there was no wining, dining, all of that. Just cut back a lot. Reduce everything. So all the things I was subscribing, premium, go back to basics. So a lot of just cutting it back, cutting it back.
Cut everything out that you can.
Everything out that you can. And I think what really helped, and this is something, a message that I hold very dearly. And I'm sure your listeners might have that one person in your life. For me, my husband was my anchor. He was my key. And fortunately, he had a stable job. So obviously that helped in, making sure that our kids were well taken care of, basics were done. And it was just about me cutting back on what I could.
I'm glad
Anyway,
you
you were
brought
asking.
him up because one of the things that I have on here is that in the book, you talk about at some point wanting to strangle your husband,
Yes.
but you don't really go into much detail on that. How much are you willing to share? And if you don't want to share anything, if you could, then just go ahead and share why you put that in the book and what came out of that. So, but yeah, how
Yeah,
much of that are you willing?
I'll go with the why I put that in the book. And you're absolutely right, Timmy. There were lots of things I had to take away or take out of that story. Clearly, it's just so personal that I think I wasn't ready at that point in time. I don't even know what I'm ready even yet, not right now.
Okay, not the
But I think
50th
what I
birthday, maybe
wanted
the 51st birthday.
50. But I think what I
Tell your
wanted
husband,
to.
hey, the 60th birthday, it's all coming out.
Yes. Just to let you know, not all perfect. And he was there. He knows about this particular incident, so he knows. But I think you're right about why I put it there. And the reason I put it there was that I am writing about the idea of the reframe, and I wanted to highlight or click on the word reframe a little bit more. Yes, we do the rest, we do the reset, but very often it doesn't mean that you have to, I don't know, quit your job or change location or do anything that radical. And that's not my message. My message is not that go quit your job and whatever, right? It's sometimes the reality, the practicality is that you have to stay in your current situation for whatever reasons. But having said that, a lot of things that we have in our mind, our perspective is very narrow. It's just our perspective, our viewpoint. This is the way I see a situation. And we forget that there is a multiple dimension to this. Other people have their perspective and they hold it as truly as we do. And they think that this is the reality as much as we do. And sometimes we get so caught up in our own emotion, especially when our emotions are really strong. Now, whether that's anger, It's fear, it's absolute joy, whatever that strong emotion is, we connect it to the perspective that everyone is seeing it the way I am. But no, people are not seeing it the way that you are, or they're not reacting to it the way we are. And so the reframe is, can you see it? Even in that difficult moment, can you see it from someone else's perspective? What were they going through? There is a pain even there. And sometimes in our pain, we ignore or we forget that there is pain in that other person's perspective. And not everyone is out there to cause pain. They may have hurt you, but very often that's not their intent. And can we take that moment, that pause, to just understand what is it that they're coming, where they're coming from? What was it that caused them the pain to react the way they do? And in that moment, can we create something that's bigger from each of our experiences? I think that's the message I wanted to anchor in that story that I had. That was a really emotive one to me. I mean, I'm sure you can understand, as a almost any married couple would probably understand the underlayers of what I'm saying here.
Fortunately, I have not yet been strangled by my wife.
I'm glad we still have you here.
You were when you were talking a second ago about the pandemic and how you lost everything. What, how has your business changed as a result of that?
Yeah,
What was your
beautiful
business like
question.
before, and what is your business now?
Beautiful question. Timmy, one thing I want to say about the pandemic, it was so painful for so many people, and I really don't want to understate that it was very painful business-wise. People lost loved one and everything. And it was painful for me, obviously, for in terms of business. Fortunately, health-wise, my family was all okay, and none of us really, went through the hardship. But it was a really defining moment for my business. I think if not for the pandemic, I wouldn't have realized the opportunities that there are in terms of online presence. It is something that really opened my eyes and literally opened the world to me
Yeah.
through this virtual medium that we call Zoom or LinkedIn or any of the social media platform, right? Whether it's IG, Facebook. Yes, I was using those platforms, but not to the extent that the pandemic showed me that actually the world is your oyster. You don't have to be only focused on your Singapore market or Singapore audience. There
Yeah.
is a lot more out there. And because everyone was doing virtually, it wasn't something like, what do you mean have a coaching on Zoom? I want to meet you face to face.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have that option, so
Yep.
let's do this virtually, face to face, which means I had clients in Japan, in the Philippines, in India, in the US as well. So it really expanded my outlook, my horizon, and of course my audience as well. So it was a is a total shift to me. And I'm, in a way, it sounds really strange for me to say that, but really thankful for the way it opened my eyes to the possibilities,
Yeah.
and
For
huge
me,
impact.
it's crazy because as business owners, I don't know if this is true for you, we fear disaster. We fear the next like disaster that's gonna completely, upend our business or just wipe us out. But if I look back, 10 years now, solopreneur into founder of a company, and I'm just getting started. But if I look back, every major disaster has made me a better business owner. And so this thing that I'm afraid of, which is like the next thing that's going to wipe me out, is if it does come, honestly, it's going to make me better as a business owner, because I'll be like, oh, I'll learn something. I'll either be like, oh, turns out I didn't need, XYZ thing that I was, paying for. Turns out this whole different channel is a viable option for me. Like for me, I just thought that I would spend the rest of my life touring as a kids book author. And I had no idea that I could start a company and like learn sales and get people to buy a product that I created for them. Like that was just not like my sales experience was just like from, being at conferences and stuff, trying to convince parents to buy books for their kids. That just dramatically shifted. And I mean, for me, it took like a few months for me to kind of like finally be like, I'm sick of not having income as a author. I want to get back out there. I want to make books for money again. And I don't know. I'm curious what it was for you, because you said you were drowning in chocolate for a little while. What was the pivot point where you were like, all right, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, honestly, the pivot point again is coming back to my husband. That just shows how much of an anchor he is in my life. It was the question he asked me. He asked me, "What can you do for yourself?" And it got me into that reflective mode, right? That there is actually something I can do for myself. So one of the first things I did was let's invest in me. At some point, the pandemic has to die off. Well, either die off or we learn to live with it, right? Which is what it is right now. So what are you going to be doing then that will make you ready? Was a question I was asking myself. And so even things like this, Timmy, I've got this, the O-ring lighting that we have, the external mic that we have, even Zoom, all of this I didn't have. I didn't have this before 2020. All the investment, even the big screen. We literally did a renovation of our room and we created small pods for recording. All of that was the outcome of, what can I do to pivot myself? And that's a physical thing, but I also invested in myself, took courses, everything, so that when I'm ready, yes, let's go. Let's start, get out of this and let's start. So it was a lot of investment. And of course, the mindset, reframing your mindset that this is not the doldrums. It's just a different way of looking at your business and what are you going to offer to your clients. So go back to your clients, keep thinking of your audience because they need something from you, irregardless of what's happening around us. And to me, the thing about business owners, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, as you said, there is always something new that's going to come, uncertainty. And the thing that I'm noticing now that a lot of people talk about is AI. And that's going to be my next curiosity, right? As an executive coach, as a facilitator, how is AI going to impact us, our business? And there will be. It already is. So that's the next thing that's on my mind and I'm getting curious about.
I want to ask you a couple of things about your book, things that you wrote in your book. I read your book. It's awesome. There's many takeaways that I got, just the importance of rest, the importance of being in tune with your body. You talk a lot about being in tune with your body and how, like, we think of ourselves as just brains. We think of this as all that's happening, but it's not. So a couple of things that you talked about that I wanted to ask you about was you explained in your book that there's a difference between mental health and mental strength. What's the difference between mental health and mental strength?
Yeah, this was such a powerful concept for me, Timmy. And this wisdom I got from one of my interviewees, in fact, a few of them, who were and still are struggling with whether it's chronic depression or just going through that. And they're kind of medically diagnosed. So they've got medication, they've got a healthcare professional that's helping them through their process, right? So it's a really kind of a medical condition. And what she said was really powerful. And she said that even though I'm diagnosed as someone who has depression, medically being diagnosed, I am still very highly functioning. So she's got a job, she's got a very stable job, doing really well, writing lots, attending courses, all of that. If you speak to her, she's such a bright person, so cheerful, able to hold a conversation and all of that. So if I hadn't known her, that well, I wouldn't have guessed that this is what she's struggling with. And this is the thing that, well, not only she, but some of the people who I've interacted with who are, clinically diagnosed with depression, they're saying it's not that we go around in literally looking sad. That is not what this thing is about. Mental health and mental strength are two different things. So we can be diagnosed to have a condition, yet we have the strength to do something about it. And they said that's the difference we find with ourselves, that firstly we recognize that we need help. So there are a lot of people who may need help, but either they don't recognize it, or even if they recognize it or realize it, they don't really want to reach out for whatever reason, right? It could be a little bit of that stigma, which resonates with me because especially in a slightly more Asian society like Singapore, there is a bit of stigma when it comes to talking about your mental health or even seeking help, right? So it is being addressed, I feel, in the Singapore context, but there is still a bit of that stigma. So for her, she's saying that yes, you can have a condition, but the strength lies in the fact that you are able to reach out and get the help that you need. You may not even need to talk about it. She is somebody who's willing to talk about it. She puts it on social media as well. So, she's willing to kind of
So
say
she
things
just
about
is very outspoken and transparent
very
about depression.
outspoken. Yes, absolutely. And she wants, I think, in her own way, help others seek help. She said the fundamental things to this is awareness, which is really key, which I talk a lot about in my book, not only for mental health conditions, but just ourselves, our own awareness, as you said, the body awareness, a connection. And the second thing is seeking the help that you need, which is where the strength comes in, because for some people, that is already going too far. I am not going to seek help again for whatever reason that might be. So that's really the difference that I'm kind of noticing in this field. And I'm so glad you brought this up to me, because even as I'm thinking of writing my second book, which is already on my mind, so many things in my first book that I'm curious and I do want to go down a lot deeper. And this is one of them. Go a lot deeper, do a lot more research in terms of what does it mean in the organizational context as well? And how can we help others who feel that they might need a lot more support?
Yeah, for sure. When you're helping, this would actually help me. Who is typically your ideal client? What's the core of your business right now?
So the core of my business is I'm an executive coach. I am corporate trainer, as well as a speaker. So my ideal client are actually HR directors, HR leaders in private sector, as well as for Singapore context, the public sector in Singapore, because that's where I came from. I worked in the Singapore Public Service for a long time, and therefore they are my biggest client at this point.
And are you
So HR
doing
directors.
more, oh, sorry. Are you doing more one-on-one coaching with the executive leader, helping them to be a better executive leader by managing the
Yes.
problems that they are having themselves? Or is it more focused on, hey, here, let me help you manage your team?
So it's both. And it kind of, the both are so interrelated that it's hard to do one without the other. So as much as they come to me saying that I have an issue with my team, I'm like, yes, we will go there, but let's talk about you. How are you doing with yourself? What are your reflections? What do you see in yourself? What are your strengths? How are you showing up with your team? So it kind of goes back to self a lot. As much as we want to lead others, the question always comes back, who am I as a leader? What values do I hold? Without that, it's hard to talk about how you're going to lead your team. What do they need from you? Yes, we'll go to the conversation for sure. Always comes back to the self. So the two are so intertwined that invariably we'll go into both.
What are some of the common issues that they will come to you? What are some of the common issues that they might be having with their team that they're coming to talk to you about? And what are some of the common issues that it turns out that they need to address in themselves?
Oh, again, great question, Timmy. The one thing I hear over and over again is motivation or the lack of motivation. And so many leaders come to me, how do I motivate my staff? How do I motivate my team? And even in workshops, as I'm walking around talking to my participants, they're like, oh, how do I motivate my team? They're so unmotivated. And again, it goes back to this thing. Are you motivated yourself? How motivated are you as a leader? What excites you? What are you working on that you are passionate about, that brings joy to you, that brings passion to you? And sometimes when I ask these questions and I'm like, and they go, no, I'm talking about my team. I'm like, I know you are. Let's just stay with you for a few minutes and see how does this question resonate with you? And they're like, oh, actually, it's hard to answer. And I'm like, yes, it is. And it is difficult for them to answer these questions as well. The questions that they've never been asked, firstly, but it will be hard for them. So, do you want to take a bit of your time getting off that treadmill, getting off that hamster wheel, and just ask yourself, yes, what resonates with me? What brings me joy? What am I passionate about? Why would I want to come into work tomorrow? Well, besides the paycheck, everyone wants the paycheck. But besides that, paycheck would only last that long. Why else would you want to come to work? These questions, to me, it's interesting. It sounds so fundamental, but often we are not asking that to ourselves because we get busy with just day to day. So I ask these questions to my clients, to my participants, and in that moment, they just go back to, yeah, I really have to ask these questions to myself. And my message to them is really this. My feeling is that I don't think we can motivate others. We can motivate ourselves, and we can create the conditions for others to be motivated around them.
But we can't actually motivate them.
But we can actually motivate them.
Interesting.
I am struggling so hard with this. I haven't found the answer in the last 3 years. I'm still waiting for the epiphany, for that golden nugget of wisdom that tells me that this is the way to motivate others. I haven't found it, but I find that we can motivate ourselves because it is contagious. It really leaks from us. So if we are motivated, we are excited, we are passionate about something, that will impact those around us in our vicinity. And they may not be excited about the same thing as you, but they will be excited about the idea of passion, of motivation. And they will ask questions themselves, and they might come to you and ask you, how do I do this? So it there will be a bit of that domino effect, ripple effect around people around you.
What do you think are the conditions for someone to become motivated?
Yeah, another great question, Timmy. One thing that I find is really key to this is autonomy. And by autonomy, I mean giving people the choice to be able to do their work in the way that they want to do it. And I'll give you a very simple example. So, as I shared with you, I'm 50 today, which puts me in an
Happy
age
birthday.
bracket where, I am not the most au fait when it comes to all the new gadgets and technology and social media platforms, right? So every time I hire someone from the much younger generation, people in their 20s, right? Or even younger than that. So I get lots of interns coming and interning with me. And I tell them that my vision is I just need a couple of exciting posts on social media. You go and figure out what you want to do and how you want to do it. And they're like, oh, do you want me to use this method, that method, this social media platform? I'm like, no, it's really entirely up to you. As long as it looks pleasing to the eye, and it's the right hashtags, the rest is really entirely up to you. And to me, it really brings, I can see the amount of effort that they put when I say something like, it is really up to you as long as you get to the outcome that I'm looking for, and this is the outcome. So in that autonomy, as long as we can give them something clear in terms of either the output, the outcome, just make that clear, because if not, it becomes a bit too blurry. But give them the autonomy of how you're going to get there. I think I've seen people really light up with that idea, especially, oh, by the way, Timmy, just going back to your earlier question, you're saying, what do people come to me for? Motivation is one. The second thing I hear people coming to me a lot with is intergenerational workforce. So a workforce where you have someone in the 60s versus someone in their early 20s, right? And they're saying, oh my God, this is so difficult. I'm like, yes, and it's going to be a lot of reframing in terms of how we connect and communicate and understand each other. So this is one of this autonomy, I think, is going to be really key, even in this intergenerational workforce that we are seeing all around the world, and especially in Asia because of our aging population.
I don't know how much this factors into what you do and who you talk to, but something that I have recently found out about motivation, and this is just like, honestly, it's a bizarre feature of humans. It's kind of messed up that it's like this, but we are motivated to give more effort and energy into things that have cost us more to begin. So, in other words, one interesting hack to get people to be motivated is to make it cost them, make it really costly to start. And I kind of hate this, and at the same time I kind of like it, but it's been funny for me to watch as I have raised the prices of my service, my clients are more motivated to follow through on what I tell them to do. And
I
it's
like
the sunk
that.
cost. It's like,
I
wow,
like
this
that.
cost me something, I better do it.
It absolutely resonates with me, Timmy, and I've seen it work for me in the last 18 months, even with this writing book product, the sunk cost fallacy. that Daniel Kahneman talks a lot about, and unfortunately he passed away, I think just a few days, a few weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But
Okay.
he's one of those thought leaders in this field of psychology, and he's published this book, Thinking Fast and Slow, where he talks about all these fallacies that we have as humans, and sunk cost fallacy is definitely one of them. And you're right. I know it worked for me, the sunk cost fallacy. I did lose a bit of money in my initial investment in this journey, but I thought, you know what? Because I've lost it, I'm gonna keep going. I'm
Yeah.
gonna keep putting my effort and get this thing to the finishing line. So yeah, you're right, Timmy. It is
Well, I'm
something
thinking
that
about this a lot lately because I have a family member who is like that. I have just watched them be so unmotivated to change their life, and they are about to experience a small windfall of cash. And I'm very concerned because I'm like, I've watched you just pee away your life. And the same thing's going to happen with this money if you don't do something. And it hurts me that, like what you said, you cannot motivate somebody. Like, it's so frustrating.
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so when you started talking about that, I was like, oh, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. We're just about like out of time, but there is one thing that you talk about in your book that I personally don't really agree with. And I thought it'd be funny to, or interesting at least, to talk about it. And maybe I do agree with it. I'm not sure. I think I just think that it's overemphasized. So one thing that you mentioned, it's not a big point that you make in your book, but you do talk about psychological safety. I feel like that's something that people talk about a lot, psychological
Yeah.
safety. I am of the opinion that it is massively overemphasized in our culture.
Okay.
I'm a big anti-psychological safety person, and I don't mean that literally, but what I mean is, it is not my job to make you feel so safe in this workforce that you can't lose your job, so you could just, you can just do whatever.
Yeah.
My job is to be a kind boss
Yeah.
that is very clear with you about the expectations. And if you fail them, I'm not going to be mad at you, but I'm also not going to keep paying you. Tell
I
me
don't
where I'm wrong.
no, I don't disagree with you, Timmy. And oh my God, Timmy, I love the fact that you're picking up all these points in my book because those are exactly the things I want to cover in my next book, and
Okay.
psychological safety is one of them.
Okay.
And the reason I bring that up, again, going back to the context that I'm in, which is the Asian context,
Yeah.
we are brought up to be quite not to speak up your mind as much, especially in front of authority. And I think it starts really from school, from since young. Don't question your teacher. Whatever your teacher says is the way to go, and that's it. Keep your head down, do your work, and get it done, kind of thing, right? And I think it permeates as we grow up that, oh, keep your head down, whatever the boss says, you just do your job. But when I look at what's happening in the world, and Timmy, we talked about it, pandemic, and even before pandemic, the uncertainty that's going on, I think keeping your head down, keeping quiet, it's not the way anymore.
Yeah.
As a team, you do need to speak up, especially when you think that things are going to go wrong, or things are not going the way it should be, or you're feeling, or forget about things, or you are feeling something within yourself that I am uncomfortable with this comment that has been made. And we talk about so much about DEI nowadays, right? So this comment is going against my identity, my whatever, right? And honestly, in the Asian context that I've seen, Timmy, we tend to just suck it in, as I said, just grit your teeth and like whatever your boss said, so you kind of do it. I think that's shifting now, but I think more can be done, which goes back to the idea of motivation, right? You can create the conditions for motivation, you can create a condition for site safety, but I agree with you, Timmy, on the point that you made. Doesn't mean that you've got the job for the rest of your life. It does mean that you are confident enough as a team player to speak your truth to power. And that's something that I think sometimes we lack, again, in the Asian context. We just take it as whatever the boss says is the way to go.
Yeah.
But having said that, Timmy, there is so much research coming out on this topic, psychological safety, that I think even the understanding of it is evolving and shifting, and the context of it is shifting.
Yeah.
And you're right, it doesn't mean you're guaranteed a job. It does mean that I guarantee that I've got your back, that as a team member, I'm not going to hunt you down just because you said something. You feel safe enough to speak your truth, and I feel safe enough to actually even say that, no, I don't agree with you. that you are, you know, we have a difference in our viewpoint. And at the end of the day, after this conversation, after this, you know, day at work, we can still and go and have our beer and our chocolate, and we're still good.
Yeah. For me, I think I genuinely get excited when somebody that I'm working for or working with or someone who's working for me disagrees with me about something and can unpack why. That gets me excited. But I still want to see it validated in the marketplace. And I'm not going to fire some, like, that's not, to me, that's not a fireable offense. Like, you disagree with me and you say, like, hey, Timmy, you're wrong. It actually should go like this. And I'm like, interesting. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. And then it backfires. Like, if it works out, I'm going to be super excited. I'll be like, whoa, you were right. If it backfires, I'm going to be like, okay, turns out that didn't work. That's not a fireable offense. But I do think that I see psychological safety get overused by people in our culture. To really mean, I get to say whatever I want, I get to think whatever I want. I'm not beholden to the metrics of what my thoughts and actions do in the marketplace to this company that I work for. I should speak truth to, it's like, okay, anytime you speak truth to power, this is just a fact of life. Anytime you speak truth to power, you are taking a risk. You are risking the current safety of your position. And so you must be comfortable with that risk if you're going to do it. So, like, I do think that people should speak truth to power when it's truly truth, and they are like, okay, I'm going to courageously speak truth to power. But just inherent
Absolutely.
in that is that you're risking your position. Because, like, you might find out that power does not agree with truth, and you got to go somewhere else.
I agree. And underlying everything that you said to me is again the point about as a leader, if you see it in the context of a leader, how are you creating psychological safety? There's something that un needs to undergird this, which is the values that you bring as a leader. And you need to speak about how you're going to contract this safe space, right? And one thing that I always tell my clients who talk about psychological safety is that it's not about saying anything and everything that's on your mind. Yes, to a certain extent it is, but you are going to be responsible for what you've said and the actions that you're doing. So anything that you say has to come with the self-responsibility, as you just kind of alluded to Timmy. And also the idea of respect. So those are, at least for me, those are my core values, right? So respect is a core value to me. And so as a leader, you have to decide what is the core values that you want to permeate in your team, in your organization. And psychological safety kind of goes with that. It is not a standalone. It kind of goes with that. So yes, you can speak truth to power, and you are doing it respectfully, and you are taking responsibility for what you've said. So you're not like dumping it and you're going to run off out the door. You are there holding it, and you're going to hold it as long as it's going to take, right? So
Yeah.
that's something that kind of goes along with that.
Yeah. Well, awesome. I'm excited to hear how you talk about it more in book number two. Okay, speaking of power, Anu, when I was reading your book, there is this little moment, like, exercise. I was actually going for a walk and I was listening to it, and you were like, I feel like it was like a breathing exercise or like a neck relaxation or something. And I was just, I as I was listening to the book, I was doing the exercise, and it was very great. And since we're talking about power, you have a slightly beefier version of that that you're offering for free called Pause for Power. Can you just talk about that and where listeners can get it?
Yes, I love this course. It is available on my website, www.anushroff.com. And it is free for everybody to just kind of have the feel of what it means to create micro spaces in your life. Very short exercises, hardly 2, 3 minutes, that you can incorporate at any point in the day, exactly like you've done, even just taking a walk. And sometimes just taking a walk is the micro pause that we need.
Yeah, agreed. I have found sometimes I'll be like leading up to a podcast interview, I'll be nervous. I'll just go for a walk. Sometimes I'm in Florida, so sometimes it'll be 100 degrees out. I'll go for a walk. I'll come back, I'm all sweaty, but I'm like, okay, I feel like I can do this podcast interview now. Anyways, Anu, this has been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time with me. Your book, Rest, Reset, and Reframe, pick it up. It's happy birthday to you. Listener, if this at all sounds interesting, go say happy birthday to Anu by picking up her book. Or checking out Pause for Power. Anu, thanks so much for being on my show.
Thank you so much, Timmy.